6. Before Jesse walked back outside to face the media an hour later, Molly told him to make sure to put on his best face. "I left it at home," he said. "You want me to run over and get it?" she said. There were two more TV trucks by then, both from Boston stations. Jesse could no longer remember at which one Jen had worked, first as a weather girl. She'd later moved up to news by sleeping with the station manager, Jesse thinking that likely wasn't a course taught at the best journalism schools. The rest of the people in front of him, he assumed now, were print and radio reporters. Jesse understood why they were all here. An old friend from the Los Angeles Times had once told him that the two biggest stories were war and big guy dies. So it was today, even though the big guy was just the top politician in a small town. Nellie Schaffner from the Paradise Town Crier was in the front row. Jesse kept waiting for her to be hired away by the Globe or a bigger paper somewhere else, or end up on television, since she had both the talent and the looks for that. Even though if he ever said that out loud, the looks part, he would probably have been on his way to Weinstein Island. For now, though, she was still in Paradise, practically a one-person staff on the Crier. Jesse liked her, not as much, Molly and Suit were fond of saying, as she seemed to like him. Jesse made a brief opening statement about finding Neil's body in the middle of the night, and then called on Nellie first. "Chief Stone," she said, "is Mr. O'Hara's death officially being classified as a suicide at this point?"
"It is being classified as an unattended death," he said. He saw Nellie grin.
"Would you care to elaborate?"
"No," Jesse said.
"Does it mean you think it might not be a suicide?"
Jesse said, "I think it is an unattended death." Jesse looked over at Gary Armstead and Ellis Munro. They both shook their heads as if Jesse were back to being a town drunk. Munro, who Jesse knew had been a wrestler at Harvard, looked tougher. Armstead was definitely prettier. Jesse called on Wayne Cosgrove then, Sonny's columnist friend from the Globe.
"Was it his own gun?" Cosgrove said.
"It was a gun," Jesse said. Now Cosgrove grinned.
"You always this forthcoming, Chief," he said.
"On a good day," Jesse said. He answered a few more questions, none to the satisfaction of those asking them, before Armistead stepped to the microphone, ready for his first close-up as mayor. "As always," he said, "Chief Stone is a man of few words." He smiled. "Occasionally, they're even well-chosen." Jesse whispered to Molly. "I've got a few words for Gary, actually." She poked him hard with an elbow.
"I just want everybody to know that the chief and his people will get to the bottom of this tragedy," Armistead said.
He paused and said, "But having said that, even as Chief Stone begins his investigation, the town needs to get back to the important work of finalizing the sale of the Throw." Jesse whispered to Molly, "Sure, the body must be good and cold by now." And got himself poked again. By the time Armistead was answering his first question, Jesse was inside his office, sitting behind his desk, reaching into his bottom drawer and taking out his old glove and the ball he kept with it, snapping the ball into the pocket with a flick of his wrist, the sound of that as loud and sweet to him as ever. He put the glove away and opened his laptop and saw the email from Scopetta, telling him that the only gun residue they'd found had been on the right hand of Neil O'Hara. The same Neil O'Hara who had been the left-handed throwing and left-handed hitting first baseman on Jesse's softball team, and the left-handed tennis player whom he'd occasionally see on one of Paradise's public courts. He was considering the odds and probabilities of that, someone firing a gun to kill himself with his off hand, when Suit poked his head in.
"Somebody here to see you," he said to Jesse.
"Friend or foe?" Jesse said.
"For you to know and me to find out," Suit said.
He shut the door behind him and stepped into the office and lowered his voice and said,
"It's Crow."